from stpetecatalyst.com.
Hey there, I'm Bill DeYoung. This is the St. Pete Catalyst and the Arts Alive podcast. Very happy today to welcome as my guest Ona Kay, who is a singer that we all know and love from around here in these here parts. You know her as Ona Kay. Ona Kay is your new name. Tell her, first of all, let's start there. Why did you do that?
Well, hi, Bill.
Hi, Ona.
So I changed it because basically everybody felt scared when seeing my name written.
Ona scared? Kay.
Yes.
Oh, my
yes.
God, it's Ona.
Yes. I love America, but Americans get really, really afraid of foreign names. So I thought that from Kay to Kay.
Yeah, you mean pronunciation? Because you came in here today, and even though we've spoken 100 times, I asked you how to pronounce your last name. Is that what you mean by scared?
No, you actually asked.
But I asked the right
nicely.
One. Yeah.
No. And I actually appreciate people asking. But there is a lot of people who just get scared of foreign names.
So well, you're like Madonna or Cher or Shakira. You're a one name person. Ona is performing June 29th, which is next Thursday, at the studio at 6:20. And there's something new coming, which I really want to talk with you about.
Yes.
I wanted to start here, though. Categorizations and genres can be such a messy thing.
Yes.
When you're talking about music, especially these days when the lines are so blurred, I think of you because I know you in jazz context with La Lucha and the other people that you perform with.
Yeah.
But you've told me often, I'm not really a jazz singer. So tell me what you mean.
So I am a musician first and foremost. I don't like to be limited by a label.
Yeah, so lumped in with, yeah.
Yeah, I love singing jazz. I love improvisation. I just think there's a lot more to music than only jazz, at least for me. I just like music, and
Well, the projects that you do, like when speaking of Oria, which you have with Alejandro Areñas, the duo project, which I find absolutely fascinating.
Thank you.
It isn't strictly jazz, is it? I mean, it's voice and bass and maybe some other things woven in. What do you like? I mean, you're from Barcelona. Okay,
yes.
Let's talk about your background. Did you come from a musical family? How did all this sort of melting pot melt all over you?
I came from a very artistic family, but not from a music family. My mother, she's a painter, and my dad, he's a writer.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up surrounded by a lot of books and a lot of, art. And we listened to a lot of music, and it was, it was my call. Like, since I was a kid, I that's all I wanted to do. I wanted to sing.
So music was, it sort of reached out and grabbed you, as they say.
That's how it feels,
I kind of relate to that. I'm not really a singer, but I kind of relate to the same thing. It's like it's been a big part of my life. It's probably before I can even remember, So were you, like, singing around the house? Was it that sort of thing? And did they... Let's give her lessons, or how does that work?
So I like to sing around the house. I like to listen to all types of music. I remember other kids like listening to, kids' music or the Backstreet Boys or the Spice Girls and all those things. I liked everything. I like classical music. I like rock music. I was very curious about music. And then I was at school one day. Our music teacher made us create groups and like little bands and create a song. And none of us knew how to play any instrument. And I was like, this is my chance. So I put everybody to play. Like I just started to lead the whole thing. And it was a lot of fun. And I think I was a little bit annoying and bossy. But
well, you're a born leader. That's what it is. Yeah.
We created a song with what we had. And the music teacher went straight to my parents and said, like, you need to put her into music. I think that that's her thing. And that's how it all started.
One of the things that I've always found so kind of fascinating about you and your background in music is that you just mentioned the Spice Girls and the Backstreet Boys. And I'm thinking that whatever was sort of filtering over from London and Paris and Barcelona in the capitals of Europe, you know, the Spice Girls weren't as big over here mm-hmm. as they were over there.
Oh, they were big there.
But I think that's so interesting that it was pop music, mm-hmm. you know, and also English language mm-hmm. pop music.
Yes.
I mean, were you sort of like the girls in ABBA? Did you learn phonetically how to sing songs in English, not really knowing what the words were?
When I was a kid, I just would make up everything that I would sing, except for the songs in Spanish or in Catalan. I would just make words up of songs that I heard in English, of songs that I heard in Japanese, too, because I was speaking anime and manga and all of that. So I would just make it up. It was funny.
How many languages do you speak and sing in?
I sing in more languages than I speak. I speak Spanish, Catalan, English, French, a little bit of Portuguese. So five.
You heard it here here first, folks.
I sing in more languages.
And Japanese, you said you were learning Japanese pop music?
When I was a kid, I loved Japanese pop. Wow. It's, yeah.
Well, you see, there's the whole spectrum of things that we're talking about. There's nobody saying you can only like this or the radio or whatever you had there. You're exposed to all sorts of things,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you can take or leave. What about jazz? Because obviously mm-hmm. that grabbed you at some point, the fact, you know, scat singing and this sort of non, I don't know, vocalese, is that what you call it? Or non, you know, non-lyrical singing.
So my dad, as I told you before, my dad is a writer.
Yeah.
And he would sit down on his computer for a lot of hours writing, and he would listen to music on the background. And he listened to very diverse music, like from Hispanic pop to music from Guinea Equatorial and from Mozambique, because he was living in several places in Africa before I was born. And he listened to a lot of jazz. And he loved particularly Ella Fitzgerald.
Mm.
And I was fascinated. Like, I thought it was so much fun. And I guess that there was also a lot of, you know, drama in my childhood. So connecting with music, I loved music so much, and connecting with something that it was so much fun, and that it went for me kind of against the rules, just singing without words. It just captivated me.
Your parents encouraged your musical thing? I know, was that always what you were going to do? You know, mom and dad, I'm doing this.
They supported it very much. My mom struggled with me being a musician. She wanted me to be an engineer. And
that's an old story.
But she supported me very much anyway. So, yeah.
Good. Okay. Can we talk about, you know, how long you've been in the States and, you know, what your journey? Because that's fascinating to me. I mean, you're a United States citizen.
Oh, no, I'm not a citizen. I'm on a visa.
She's not a citizen, folks. Okay. Okay, so when did you come here, and, you know, why?
I came here 6 years ago for a lot of reasons, personal reasons, mm-hmm. and also because I really, really, really wanted to have a music career. I had a career in Spain, but I felt, I mean, I think it's way more difficult to have a career in music in Spain, in Europe in general. Mm-hmm. And in Spain specifically, if you're not a flamenco artist or a classical musician, which are the things that have more support from, you know, the government and all of that, it's really, really hard to make a living.
They support musicians over there in some ways, don't they?
In some places in Europe, not that much in Spain.
Maybe Germany, I'm thinking.
Yes.
I've heard about this.
Yeah. Yes. In some countries, more, you know, in the north of Europe, they have great support systems for musicians. In Spain, not that much. They support very much music education.
Mm-hmm.
So they are very, very good at that. Not as much our careers.
So you like the idea of coming here.
I thought I would give it a try.
Is there a certain degree of, the States? I mean, that's where a lot of the great artists came from, and, you know, they're picky over there.
Yes, yeah, definitely. I was afraid that there would be a lot of competence. I was afraid that my genre at that moment, I believed that it was jazz and only jazz. Mm. And I thought, well, what is it going to do, a Spaniard whose mother tongue is Spanish and Catalan singing in English with an accent? so there was a lot of fear. And I was very surprised of you know, how with how much warmth people welcome me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you speak English when you came here?
Yes, not very good, but yes.
She has her translator here, folks, but she hasn't looked at it. She hasn't looked at it one time yet.
Kiss me. You know. Confidence.
Sometimes I think I need one, too. And I, you know, I've spoken English all my life. You know, I think you came into, well, my orbit, into the work that I do. Mm-hmm. It was probably around 2018, 19, maybe just pre-pandemic.
Yeah. 19, I think.
Yeah, and I remember you doing this version of Paul McCartney's song Blackbird, where you did all the voices, that video with all the little sort of Brady Bunch heads of yours. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's an American reference. I don't think you get that. But and I thought, this is pretty cool. You know, and it's very jazzy. It's very scat-like, but the video is cool because, you know, there's all these little Onikeys kind of looking around and harmonizing with each other. So that's not jazz and only jazz. I mean, people might say, well, that's a sort of jazzy arrangement of a song like that, but not really.
Jazz is it's a very interesting thing. The reason why I fell in love with jazz, it's not because of the structure or because of trad jazz. It's because the freedom.
Mm.
I am in love with the freedom of jazz, with the freedom of improvisation. Then it's. I think it's very difficult nowadays to define jazz. I think that also the way that we understand jazz in America is very different to the way that we understand jazz in Europe. For us Europeans, jazz is that. It's freedom, it's improvisation. But we have a lot more freedom, again, in the way that we interpret the form, mm-hmm. the harmony. For Americans, jazz is your traditional music, so to speak.
There's a certain fearlessness in that, and I do respond to that. When I've seen you play with Alejandro, you know, mm-hmm. it's like you look very comfortable kind of weaving in and out and doing what you're doing, and yes. I think that's admirable. It's not being restricted by this is the way it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. It's by being here and now.
Can we talk about Aria for a second? I mean, because Daring Flowers was like a very cool record mm-hmm. that the two
Thank
of you,
you
did. And what's going on there? You guys still working together? I mean,
yes.
I saw your holiday shows last year. Christmas around the world, you know, multilingual and all of that and just fabulous stuff. So, yeah, what's going on with you two?
We are absolutely keep on working together. Actually, he is going to be also a part of my album as Onakay. Mm-hmm. We actually have a concert on the 28th at the Blue Bamboo, the day before my concert at the studio.
Tell me where Blue Bamboo is. I know that.
It's in Winter Park.
In Winter Park, yeah.
Yes.
I don't get there all that often, but I
do see
that. And 29th, you're at 620. So.
Yes.
Okay, well, let's go there. Let's transition then, rather
yes.
awkwardly, from Aria to saying, what happens on the 29th? What you said something about, you know, soul music. There's something, you're taking another left turn. And is Alejandro in that band? I guess that's the question.
Alejandro is going to be there, but he's going to be helping with the sound. He's not going to play. Elias Stone is going to play on the bass.
Mm-hmm.
Alejandro, so for... I'm going to explain a little bit of this. So the concert on the 29 is kind of the first.
I don't mean to throw a wrench in the whole thing. A spanner in the works, as they say. Yeah.
So the concert on the 29 is the first time that I'm going to present this project. It feels very new to me because I want to get rid of the label jazz, not because I don't love jazz. I still love jazz, and there is a lot of jazz elements on what I do, but I feel that this new project has a new approach. So it's the first time that I'm going to do this, and it's the first, it's a way to get ready for my new album that I'm going to record in August, and it's going to be released in October.
New approach. You got to define that for me. Give us some clues here. What are we talking about? Are you going to become Aretha Franklin now? Or
No. I want... So when I chose soul, I'm going to be very honest. I struggle a lot finding the labels for my music. I don't like at all putting labels. I chose soul because I think it's closer to what I'm doing now, just because I want more space to tell a story in every song. I want that space for telling a story with the music, with the lyrics together. I feel like I need a little bit more space for words in order to tell that story. Also, I am going to have a string quartet with me. So it's going to be like a rhythm section.
Ooh, who are more jazz. You heard it here first, folks.
So there's going to be a rhythm section that's more jazz oriented. And then the string quartet, most of them, they are classical musicians. So it's going to be, you know, it's just another, a very different approach. Yeah. So
that's fantastic.
Thank you.
So you're going to, and after this is the debut, right? So you're going to go and record after that.
Yes. Yeah. In August.
Okay. Is I'm going to keep mentioning Alejandro because he's my friend and he's so cool. Is he involved
he's
in
really
the recording?
Cool.
Is he producing?
Absolutely, you know? Yeah, absolutely.
See, I got you, buddy.
absolutely. So the approach for this album, instead of only having one band, like I did with Mirage, everything was recorded with La Lucha.
Yeah.
And Alejandro and I produced the album together.
Yeah.
For this album, I want to use a lot of different musicians because one of the reasons is we have so many amazing musicians in town. Yeah. I think that they are like, I don't know, hidden treasures. And I want to play with all of them.
Mm.
And also every song kind of requires a different... just every song is a world itself that needs something in particular. So I'm going to have a lot of musicians collaborating. So in some songs, Alejandro is going to be the bass player. I would say most of them.
Mm-hmm.
Some others, Elias Tona, another amazing bass player.
Elias is playing on the 29th.
Yes, correct. Yeah. There are going to be different piano players, different guitar players.
Yeah. So I've seen you play with LaRue. I've seen you play with all kinds of different people.
Yes.
You know, that's so fascinating to me. I want to stop you there, and this is one of the very few things I thought of in advance here. As you see, I'm winging this. But when I was younger, mm-hmm. for lack of a better phrase, people who made records, mm-hmm. who made recordings, you know, the goal was to get noticed, to get signed, to get famous. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the whole dynamic has changed.
Absolutely.
You know, the music business isn't what it was. The people who listen to music don't do it in the same way. What is your goal? I mean, for recording, for making records, because you've been a part of some really good stuff around here, and I see there's more coming. What is the goal? Just to get it out of your system and hope that, I mean, I mean that in the nicest way. I mean, you're not going to sell 5 million records. We know this.
Mm-hmm.
You might, and then in which case,
we don't know that, Bill.
No, we might, and it might be hard getting you back on the podcast once that happens.
I will always be back to your podcast.
Okay. I'm going to hold you to it. But, in other words, what's the impetus for recording? You know.
So, let me make a comparison here. For Mirage, I just needed to get it out of my system. Mm-hmm. I just needed to put that out there. It was something very clear that I needed to say, and that's it.
There was some personal stuff on that record. I remember you told me.
Sure,
stuff. Yeah, right.
This album is, on one hand, something that I have wanted to do for a very long time. I really wanted to do this mix of instruments, probably almost since I was a kid. And in the other hand, I feel that the world just needs music and musicians and people like us who wants to create something authentic and beautiful and just make the world a little bit of a better place. And I just think that we have to keep on doing it. And that's it. And just hope to get to as many people as we can so we make this world a little bit better.
How cool is that? You know, it's so funny. And I didn't mean to draw comparisons like the nasty old days when I was young. But, you know, let's just say in the 1970s and the 1980s, it was different. Mm-hmm. People had different reasons for doing this thing. Yeah. And the whole indie thing kind of overcame that. And it's really nice to hear someone say it's just about making good music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's a brilliant thing.
Good authentic music. That's
pretty much it. Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah, okay. Look, that was an awkward silence there. Okay, you are at the studio at 6:20 on the 29th mm-hmm. of June, which is yes. next Thursday.
Correct.
And you can get tickets there at the studio620.org because I can't remember. Well,
that's correct.
Yeah, it is. Okay. I always come to this point in the
perfectly.
Podcast where I can't remember and I forgot to write down the website. But absolute pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for
Likewise.
Coming in. What's your website where people can listen to your music?
My website is www.onak.world.
That world.
Yes.
See, even that little thing of world music there. Say something in Spanish to sign us off, will you?
Ah, bueno, claro. Supongo que habrá muchos oyentes en español, así que muchas gracias por escucharnos.
From stpcatalyst.com.